when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side. I mean, that's the name of this program. Here on altrighttv.com or whiteresistanceradio.com, you can reach us by either route or channel. Oh my gosh, I just completed a day of travel yesterday. I traveled from Toronto to the Okanagan Valley in British Columbia, arriving in the city of Kelowna. That's a trip I've taken many, many times before. I have considerable business out here, political business mostly, but this was no fun. The new normal for travel is bad news and maximum punishment of the traveler. Well, for one thing, you cannot go through security at the airport unless you're wearing a mask. In fact, you cannot even get into the airport without slapping a mask on. I was approached by a relatively friendly guy who said, "Oh, yeah, you have to wear a mask." I said, "Really? Yes. Oh, yes." I said, "Well, does anybody really believe in this stuff anymore?" He was, I think, a little taken aback. Well, I said, "The Prime Minister of our country doesn't believe in it." He was up, as you know, on Parliament Hill there a couple of Fridays ago, taking a knee. Yeah, part of an anti-racism, and that means anti-white, protest. Now, leave aside the craziness of the leader of your country being in a protest that's at least partly against his own government. Okay, we'll let those relatively logical concerns go. But we've been told for ever since March, social distancing. Everywhere you go, you're reminded to be 2-6 feet away from anybody else, or 6 or 2 meters, as they say in under the foreign system here in Canada. So okay, fine. A lot of people want to wear, or told they have to wear masks and so on. But I have to say, well, there he is in a crowd with a security detail, several cabinet ministers, including the appalling former Minister of Immigration, that Somali Muslim immigration lawyer, Ahmed Hassan. But what about the social distancing? What about the 6 feet requirement? And he'd been hiding out at his cottage for the last several months, issuing press statements from the front door, well back from the crowd of reporters, all because of social distancing. He had wanted to recall Parliament, social distancing, coronavirus, the great old excuse for everything. So I said to the guy, I mean, does anybody believe this anymore? I don't. Well, he was kind of sympathetic, but he said, well, you have to. Okay. So that's the first indignity. You have to have that mask on. Now, there's a lot of valid challenges to this whole business of wearing a mask. And I'll get to those, if not today, then probably tomorrow. Quite apart from, I don't like to be forced. The mask I had on, by the time I finally arrived at my destination, some 12 hours later. Now, not all of it was on the plane. And sometimes I did not wear the mask. Obviously, when I was driving, I didn't. But there was air travel for about 9 hours, with sometimes in airports. The mask stunk of popcorn. I never had a kernel of popcorn. I don't know why it smelled that way. It was damp inside. It was tickly. And I have trouble breathing through it. Now, I don't mean I'm choked. Yes, I can breathe, but not well. There's very, very good reason to challenge the usefulness of this, but even better reason to challenge being forced. Hey, if you want to wear a mask, that's your business. Anyway, so that was just the beginning. So I inquired, well, is the lounge open? I'm a frequent flyer, so that means I get to use the Maple Leaf Lounge. Well, it's not open. Why? A coronavirus. Why is that? Oh, what's the connection? Well, we're waiting for Premier Ford. Now, I'm still in Ontario, right? I'm at the Toronto International Airport to give us the word. So I said to the Air Canada employee, it doesn't make any sense to me. The lounge would take some you know, the frequent flyers out of the main body of the airport. Put them off to themselves with a few amenities. You know, we get a little breakfast and you have a cup of tea, a cup of coffee, you know, fruit juice, pop if you want, etc. So that's good, right? There'd be fewer people milling around, and it would retain the jobs for the people in that lounge. You know, like, good. Well, the employees sort of, yeah, you know, you're right, but, you know, the big boys have said. Yeah, the big boys are always saying. So, okay. Now I'm on the plane. Toronto to Saskatoon. Now, I did say I was going to Kelowna. Well, I'm telling you, you can't, it's hard to go almost anywhere directly today in Canada. So, okay, I go off to Saskatoon. And the first thing they do is they tell you that our regular service of, you know, tea, coffee, soft drinks, etc., is suspended. Why is that? Coronavirus. Once again, we got to challenge this. Why? What would it mean? Well, it would mean that the steward or stewardesses go up and down the aisle probably twice through the flight. With a trolley, and on that trolley they've got some hot tea and hot coffee and soft drinks and so on Air Canada you starve, so okay, you're not going to get any food, but why? Well, you have to speculate. They're wearing gloves, they're wearing masks, so they would ask you, what would you like? A cup of coffee, okay, and what would you take in it? Anything? Yeah, okay. Two creams and two sugars. So they hand you two little, you know, containers of creams and two little envelopes of sugar, and that'd be your coffee. And when later on during the flight, they would come along with a big garbage bag attached to their trolley, and you would hand your cup back to them. They've got gloves on. Where's the danger? I don't see it. And if actually it's that dangerous to fly with us, why do they have the stewards or stewardesses on the plane at all, other than to scold us and tell us to keep the masks on? It's part of the excuse to cheap out, and that's what it is. That the coronavirus will be used as an excuse for every manner of cheaping out. So okay, fine. I now have arrived at my first destination at Saskatoon. I'm kind of hungry. I had to take off, get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Didn't have much time for much of a breakfast, so I'm kind of hungry. Is there any food to be had in the airport? Well, no. Well, I said, Saskatchewan is open. Apparently restaurants can now serve food. Why can't they serve food at the airport? Big blank stares. Was there no food here? Well, no. Well, there was a machine which dispensed things like a little bag of chips, if I recall correctly, some pop cans, chocolate bars. Well, the least objectionable thing looked to me like a Kit Kat. So I dutifully pumped $2.20 into the machine, and out came a Kit Kat. Now, it's not a regular size bar. It would be about maybe 2 inches long, maybe a trifle more. The sort of size that would be more suitable for a Halloween treat for the kiddies. Well, I was outraged that to be ripped off. So I complain again at the same thing. Saskatchewan is open. Now, unlike in Ontario, or at least in Toronto, where the Toronto International Airport is, or actually it's in Peel region, but we're still at stage one. The wet restaurants are not open. But in Saskatchewan, they are. So why is the Maple Leaf Lounge not open? They can't give me much of a reason. Oh, coronavirus. Well, that's the excuse for everything. So, okay, now next flight. I'm on the... I try to buy a newspaper. I go to the Relay. That's a chain of... kind of convenience stores in airports across Canada. Do you have any newspapers? No. Why not? They're not delivered. They're not delivered. Am I hearing this right? They're not delivered. What, is there a strike? Have the newspapers all folded? No, none of which is true.
I get a blank look.
Okay, fine. So on to Vancouver. Same thing there. I get out of the airport. I have a bit of a layover. So I go to search for the Maple Leaf Lounge. Well, it too is closed, even though some restaurants are open in British Columbia. I inquire again. Well, they're not open. Maybe in July. I said, well, yeah, but I'm paying top dollar for this airfare. This is not a deep discount airfare. And I don't get the chance to use the lounge because it's not open. Coronavirus. So I go to another Relay convenience outlet and ask, are there newspapers? Any newspapers here? No. Why not? Oh, they're not delivered. What do you mean they're not delivered? Well, the foreigner behind the counter can't explain it to me. And I don't know what the explanation is. Except, we are being cheaped out and being treated more and more nastily. So I get into a conversation with a stewardess. Well, I have some time to kill. Oh, yeah, well, I do finally find food of a sort. The Tim Hortons, that's a donut and coffee outlet in Canada. Well, the one at the airport is open, sort of. I order a coffee and a donut. So that's my a bowl of cereal. About 8 hours ago, and now I have a donut in my stomach. Well, that's a start, I guess. And then I find out that the Tim Hortons there, as in other airports in Canada, does not accept their loyalty, will not swipe your loyalty card. You see, the loyalty card entitles you to a free coffee every 7 orders. So, you know. Well, why not? The foreigner can't tell me. Except, we don't have a swipe machine. I see. Well, why don't you get one? I said, I'm a shareholder. Not only that, I'm a customer. Why don't you get one? Well, you know, that's part of a totalitarian regime. And nobody actually knows anything. It's always orders from on top. So, a short flight, needless to say, no coffee, no amenities, and finally, I arrive at my destination. And, let me see, what else? Okay, I collect my luggage and get my rental car, and now I'm on my way. I have a 2-hour drive to my destination in the southern part of the Okanagan Valley, and I'm now in a fairly desperate and determined search for some food. I pass restaurants are sort of open in British Columbia. Well, I'll look for I want some fast food. I know it's junk food, but I'll stop at a McDonald's because I kind of recall there was one or two along the highway. So, in a couple of miles, I come across a McDonald's. So I pull in. And I look around and I try to get into the restaurant, to be able to order my burger over the counter and sit down and enjoy my, a decent meal, but at least something to fill me till I can arrive at my destination in another 2.5 or 3 hours. Well, can't do it. It's closed. Why? Nobody can tell me. So I go through the drive-thru. I have another joyful experience. I'm asked, well, what do you want to order? So I place my order. And then the foreigner, are there no jobs for Canadians? Can't they hire a white person? The foreigner, from her accent, Oriental of some sort, asked me a question, or says something to me, I'm not sure what. Now, don't forget, I'm a native speaker of English, I speak some French, I speak Spanish, I have dealt with foreign languages almost all my life, so I'm not unused to hearing foreign accents. I could not understand what she said. I asked her 3 times to repeat herself. She did. I'm still not sure what she said. So anyway, I drive up to the wicket and whatever it is. I guess couldn't have been that important because I give my money, get my burger. But there's no place to go. No place to sit. Utter degradation. So I start my journey down to the South Okanagan. I find a parking lot. I pull in, turn the radio on, and have my lunch.
All of, and many of these restrictions are simply not explicable by coronavirus. Okay, I don't immediately go to my destination. I have some banking to do. I go to a bank, and this officious Indian from India, not native Indian, tells me and several other poor people there we have to line up. So I always make it a point of being surprised by being told I have to line up, and usually using some choice words. Another goddamn sheep line. There's no point smiling about these things. There's no point saying, oh, well, you know. No, that's giving in to tyranny. And who is he ever officious? And the idea is one person comes out of the bank and one person can go in. So there we are in the blazing sun. There's a woman ahead of me. So I strike up a conversation with my usual, does anybody believe this stuff anymore? And she says to me, well, I know what you mean. In some countries they take, and I'm not quite sure what she said. I think it was Tylenol 3 and something else, and it cures it because it's really a bacteria. Now, I don't know if she was correct, but at least she was enlightened enough not to believe all the nonsense. So finally it's her turn. She gets to go in. And two more people come out of the bank, so I proceed to go in, but the Indian tells me, no, you have to wait. God knows why. But it really feels good, doesn't it, to be able to boss people around, especially if they're white people. So finally I get to go in, and I'm ushered to a seat. I've got to sit down before I get called up to a line. okay, but I choose the wrong seat. So the Indian comes along again, and motions me to a different seat. What does it matter? Anyway, I said, you really do enjoy bossing people around, don't you? Well, now he comes up and wants to know my name. And he's going to put it into a little, computer-like thing, a tablet, perhaps. What do you need to know my name for? I'm here on business. Just out of sheer cussedness, I'm looking at the woman I've been talking to, and I said, Lee Harvey Oswald. He's so stupid. He doesn't even know I'm playing him. So she gets a big grin out of that. And I'm waiting about 10 more minutes, and nothing's happening. I thought, I need to see somebody about a particular issue. This may take some time. I thought, I'm dog tired. I just get up and I announce, well, later this week, if I have a whole afternoon to devote to this, I'll come back. And I march out of the bank. I pursued the same business at a different bank in this town today, Tuesday. I thought, well, I've had my confrontation with the Indian. I will go to this other branch of the same bank. And so I did. And it appeared to, except for a couple that were in front of the bank, but they were talking to each other. It looked, oh, there's nobody here. There's no lineup. Hooray, I walk in. So I walk in. I immediately get called back by this pushy woman, who says to me, yeah, you can't just walk into the bank. So why not? I'm a customer. Well, no, there's a line. I said, not another few choice words, sheep line. She didn't like that. I said, where's the line start? Well, it's behind these people. I said, well, I thought they were just having a chat. I mean, they didn't look like a line to me, but what do I know? And of course, they were closer. They were, you know, within a couple of feet of each other, not 6 feet. Now, I don't know if they were a couple. I think if you're a couple, that's okay. I don't know if they were friends or what their relationship was. No, nor did it much matter. So, okay, I'm in the sheep line. And I let her know. She said, well, haven't you been to banks before? I said, oh, yes. And I deeply resent the complete waste of my time having to be put in these sheep lines. Why can't I line up in the bank? Oh, well, social distancing. Yeah, but we're socially distanced, but then the bank, it's a big branch. It's nicer outside. I said, no, it's not. It's hot. I'd rather be inside. She said, well, how many people do you know who've gotten sick from coronavirus? Or I said, nobody. And I've talked to a lot of people, and none of them knows anybody who's gotten sick. Well, she claimed to know somebody on the coast of British Columbia who died. Unfortunately, I was just so annoyed, I didn't continue the conversation, but I really should have asked. Yeah, but how old was that person? Or was that person already medically compromised? And that is a problem. Yeah, coronavirus is an opportunistic and parasitic virus. And it can hurt you if you are already compromised. You know, if you already have respiratory problems, or you're very old and you've got heart problems, stroke problems, tuberculosis. Well, hopefully not tuberculosis, but diabetes and so on. Anyway, and I said, well, I'm hoping that eventually, soon people will revolt. And we won't put up with this. I mean, you know, I hate being treated like a sheep. Well, this is going to last for a very long time, she said. There won't be going back to a normal. We'll continue to have to do this. And I thought, yeah, I kind of think that's the plan. A regimented, broken population. And many of the things we are asked to do have no connection with, you know, the supposed coronavirus. I mean, it's invoked, of course, as an excuse for every restriction imposed upon us. But if you take the official party line about what the dangers are, many of these restrictions don't even have a connection with the supposed dangers. Yeah, I mean, they just don't. There's no logical connection. There isn't. So, that was so. Finally, I got into the bank and I began to transact my business. And one of the things I needed was to be able to see. They give them fancy titles, but they're the ones who hide out in their offices. They're a step above tellers. They're advisors of some sort. Okay, yeah. I want to see an advisor. I don't have to go into the details of my business, but anyway, that's what I needed. So I'm discussing the situation with the teller. Well, when did you want to do it? I said, well, what about now? Oh, we're all booked up. Well, okay, when? What about next week? Well, I said, I won't be here. I'll be back in Ontario. Oh. Well, maybe we could do it at another branch. Okay, so much searching on the internet, and eventually I get, after a while, get a bit of an appointment. I said, well, why is it, why are you so booked up? Oh, she said, we've had staff reductions. I said, yeah? But you're an essential service. Why would the bright boys leading the bank reduce? I didn't say it that way, but I said, well, why would there be staff reductions? Well, I'm not going to get into that with you. I thought, you arrogant bitch. I'm a customer. Well, actually, I'm more than a customer. I'm a shareholder in the Toronto Dominion Bank. Why? Why are there staff cutbacks? Well, I said, have they been unemployed? I mean, like, they're in a, it's an essential service. Well, I didn't get an answer. Otherwise, she didn't want to get into that with me. And you, the minute you begin to probe, you run into this insufferable arrogance. Oh yeah. Well, in my discussion with back to my airline experiences, I was talking to a relatively sympathetic stewardess yesterday. And I said, you know, if Air Canada doesn't change its ways, it will not get the customers back. You see, I'd inquired about a trip overseas. And I was informed by Air Canada Super Elite, and they said, you know, I'm one of the privileged people, I was informed that they would not serve food on the transatlantic flight. So Toronto, let's say, to Frankfurt would be 8 hours. No food? Well, you can bring your own. Well, that's nice, yeah. And paying top dollar for a ticket, I have to bring my own sandwiches or whatever? No way. I mean, that's outrageous. No tea or coffee? No. No alcohol? No. Well, can I bring my own? Well, we can't do that. Well, why not? I'm over 21. I'm an adult. They can't explain. I said, look, what you're telling me is we would be in something fairly close to prison conditions where I'd have to wear a mask for 8 hours and paying top dollar. People will not do that unless they're masochists, and there, of course, are a few masochists, or they absolutely have to travel. People are going to start saying, do I really need that trip? And to talk about tourism, you want to go through that misery to begin your trip, and then at the end of your trip go through the same? I don't think so. Oh yes, well, if they don't change, and on return to Canada from overseas, you have to quarantine for 2 weeks? Hey, it's just not fun anymore. I mean, it's just not even acceptable. And it will be the same for domestic flights. I think Air Canada is using this as an excuse for cheaping out on people, among other things. And I explained to her, I said, for one thing, so many people have sipped the Kool-Aid of coronavirus hysteria, who believe this. They believe their lives are in absolute danger. They won't be flying, and they won't fly for a long time. There's not much you can do about those people. You have been complicit already in scaring the ever-loving bejesus out of them. There were people who took years before they would fly again after 9/11. You know, the sight of those hijacked planes crashing into the World Trade Center, the Twin Towers, or crashing in the field in Pennsylvania. Some people were absolutely terrified. Perhaps the elaborate and in many cases ridiculous security precautions, you know, the wanding you down and you can't bring liquids and this and that, may have been a propaganda effort to reassure them. Although the few actual hijacking attempts that occurred were taken down, were defeated, not by the marshals. So it turns out the marshals that we'd been promised, for the most part, never flew. It was passengers and a crew member in one case who jumped the weirdos. There's one, the underwear bomber, and the other one was the shoe bomber, and subdued them. But anyway, but there are people for a long time, maybe even still, who will not fly because of their fear of what happened at 9/11. That's 19 years ago. I think the fear is far greater because of the coronavirus. At least with the terrorists, we could be assured that this was unusual. They're not everywhere. With coronavirus, people being so propagandized to think, I mean, everybody's to be afraid, to be avoided. Well, there'll be people who, I mean, there are already people who decide that I'm not flying. No way. If things return to normal, or a bit more normal, those people will probably not fly for a very long time. And so I was trying to explain to this stewardess that of those who are brave enough or informed enough not to be scared witless by this, there will be a strong disincentive to fly for anything that isn't absolutely necessary. Why put up with this being shoved around, forced to wear a mask, denied food, denied a decent drink, all allegedly for your own safety? Well, of course it isn't. That's an excuse, among other things, for cheaping out. And I said, yeah, I know you don't make decisions, but would you, you know, pass that on up the chain of command? And I'm telling you this as a frequent flyer.
I fly about 100,000 miles a year. So I know what I'm talking about. And I would be dissuaded from at least an overseas flight if I have to put up with those guys. It shouldn't be an endurance test. Flying is, depending on who you are, is stressful enough. You know, it's a bit of a strain on the body. But to add to the suffering, out of pure, I think it's pure sadism. Unacceptable. And for a lot of people, it's not going to happen. So what's going to happen to the airline industry? Oh, yeah. Well, unless there's deep discount of fares, a lot of people are not, you're going to put up with this, all this deprivation and still pay top dollar? No way. Well, here's another COVID virus story. Just before I left, I went into a store called Pet Value. It's a chain of stores that sells, as you might imagine, pet foods and, you know, kitty litter and treats and things like that. So I went in and I bought my big bag of cat litter. And at the counter, there was a sign that said, "Keep your cash." Keep your cash. So I said to the girl behind the counter, she had pink hair. Well, nice enough. She helped me out to my vehicle with this big bag of cat litter. But I said to her, "That's illegal." Oh, she says, "It comes from senior management." I said, "It could come from God, but it's still illegal." Cash, Canadian currency, is legal tender for debts in Canada. That's what the law says. That's what Paul Fromm says. That's what the law says. And rightly so. Well, she said, a business can accept or reject any type of payment it wants. I said, that's not true. It can reject checks. You know, they don't have to accept a check. They can say, we can't accept credit cards or debit cards, but they cannot refuse cash. Well, I was in a hurry, so I was not. I suppose the best thing might have been simply to have said, "Well, look, here is the exact change. How much was it?" Well, it was exactly $12.42. I could have taken a $10 bill, a toonie, that's a Canadian term for $2 coin, and 40 cents, because they rounded off to the nearest 5. So in this case, 12.42 would be 12.40. So taking out a $10 bill, a $2 coin, and let's say 4 dimes, and plunked it on the counter and said, "Well, I've paid, and I'm leaving with that that cat litter." That's probably what I should have done. More people have to do this. You know, and all answer was, "Well, that's what that's what head office says." I know. I'd like to know specifically by name who in head office says this. So I said, "Well, look, I'm in a hurry, so okay, I'll use a debit card. But would you pass this on up the line? Your company cannot do that. They cannot reject cash." Now, of course, the old excuse: "The coronavirus." Well, why is that? Well, cash and coins are traditionally, thought to be somewhat dirty. Fair enough. Wash your hands. We're always being told to wash our hands. I mean, most of these people wear gloves anyway. And it was always good advice, long before coronavirus, to wash your hands. Especially if you had handling cash. Good idea. Good advice. I have no problems with that. One of the things that concerns me is that the many restrictions and the abuses of people's dignity and human rights are these are being perpetrated, I think, among other things, to find out how much we'll suffer. I mean, how much can you put over on these people? And I've said that to more than one person, hoping that maybe somewhere there's someone with enough intelligence to get it. How much could we could a would-be dictator put over on Canadians? And my unfortunate conclusion is just about anything. Just about anything.
Of the New World Order people, a cashless society. The cashless society is very, very dangerous.
Now, I don't have an objection to credit cards. I know some people do. And yes, of course, they can track you to some extent that way. So, but you know, some of us, most of my activities, I don't care if you wanted to know that I ate at such and such a restaurant, well, when you still could find a restaurant, or that I bought $200 worth of building materials for my place, that doesn't concern me. Some things would. I don't have an objection per se to credit cards or to debit cards, per se. What I do have an objection to is the refusal to accept cash, because where the cashless society will go is this. You will conduct all your business with your card. I'm not sure yet what that card would be. It could be a credit card. It could be, I guess, the equivalent of a debit card. Not only would that make you very easy to track everything you do, but what happens if that card somehow cancels? Is canceled. You say, oh, that couldn't happen. Oh, I've had it happen. Some years ago, I renegotiated a mortgage, and part of one of the conditions was that I have that particular bank's credit card reduced from a certain limit to a lower limit. All right, I agreed to that. But when I got to a foreign country, I found that a Visa card, that's with a completely different bank, no longer worked. Now, at first, I put it down to certain other problems. I thought, well, maybe I wasn't asked for the PIN number, so perhaps they thought it was an incomplete transaction. But anyway, I eventually called the credit card, and they said, oh, Mr. Fromm, you canceled your card. I said, I did not. When? Well, they gave me a date a couple of days before. I said, I did not do that. Now, my card was restored. That's the good news. But it drove through home to me, and nobody could ever figure out how that happened, except that an employee of Bank A, which doesn't issue Visa cards, somehow managed to get Bank B to cancel my Visa card. I never asked for that, never gave permission, and it was restored. That's the good news. The bad news is that supposing it hadn't been restored. Now, it showed me that even a relatively lowly person in a bank can somehow cancel my credit card. Now, supposing that was my one and only card in this new order of a cashless society. I wouldn't be able to resort to cash because there is no cash. I couldn't ask a friend, listen, I'm shy, I was in a foreign country, but I'm shy $100 for the bill. Could you pay for me? Well, lend me the cash or pay. Well, they don't have any cash. And you quickly are a non-person. You've basically been canceled. That's the danger of a cashless society. And that's why I think we must absolutely rebel and resist against any company that says they will not accept cash. I mean, first of all, it's illegal. Can't do it. Not allowed under the current laws. But there, of course, are companies that for their own reasons would like to do it. And, as long as you're prepared to put up with this disrespect, they'd be glad to oblige you. There are companies that everything is for their convenience, and I think that's one of the things that's going to come out of this coronavirus scare. Some companies will be able to move a lot further down the line in reducing services or in demanding not accepting cash. It's really important that people resist this, because once if we ever arrive at a cashless society, you will be immensely vulnerable, incredibly vulnerable. Who gets who has the power to cancel your card? Do you know? Can anybody assure you it won't be the government? Or let's say you've been accused of being a racist, or on what grounds could your card be canceled? Who'd have the power to do it? Well, I'm not sure we want to find out, because we already know there are forces that would like to destroy anybody who's a dissident. Well, here's a great song by Merle Haggard. I think it sums up much of the way he felt through all of his life. I think it's a song that, of course, could almost be the theme of the Donald Trump campaign and presidency, and one of the things that I think we can all strongly agree with. It's called America First. Now, let me take me a couple of, hopefully just a few seconds to get this off the internet connection. Where I am right now is not the best, hopefully both of you can go with the flow. Is going to be a little bit truncated. Just
for change, and let's rebuild America first. Our highways and bridges are falling apart. Who's blessed and who has been cursed? There's things to be done all over the world, but let's rebuild America first.
Apologize that this is a little bit truncated. Great song. Now, this is Merle Haggard's America First.
Why don't we liberate these United States? We're the ones who need it the most. You think I'm blowing smoke? Boys, it ain't no joke. I make 20 trips a year from coast to coast.
Haggard, and that's America First. Here's one that he did with Gretchen Wilson, or actually Gretchen Wilson did with him, with a guest appearance by Merle Haggard, and this is Gretchen Wilson and Politically Uncorrect. I think actually that's Politically Incorrect, but a great song, and he does, Merle Haggard does.
Hi, I'm Rex Moore with The Motley Fool, and I've been to a very crowded CES for 8 straight years now.
That's not exactly what I want. This is Merle Haggard and Gretchen Wilson, Politically Uncorrect. Great song, I think, and some really great, great sentiments, great lyrics. I think you'll like them too. So this is from about 10 years ago with Gretchen Wilson and Merle Haggard.
Must come down.
A trip to the grocery store or a tank of gas.
It's a family farm that's been in the family for over 100 years being sold.
I'm concerned about the violence and the death.
Feels like I have, you know, less money to spend.
Another deadly day in Iraq as 11 U.S. soldiers.
I'm for the lone man on the totem pole.
Thank you.
here's another one by Merle Haggard. Where did America go? Well, he thought a lot about about his country and was not politically correct. Even back in the 1960s with the song that, of course, is the theme song of this show, and that's The Fighting Side of Me. Well, it wasn't always...
The day I started loving you, and I'm right back where I belong. I got over you just long enough to let my heart ache. And then today I started loving you again. What a fool I was to think I could get by with only these few million tears I cried. I should have known it was yet to come, and the crying time for me had just begun. Today
apologize for the hiatus here. I have a very not the best internet connection here up in the mountains. Paul Fromman, you're on The Fighting Side of Me here on altrighttv.com or whiteresistanceradio.com, and I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side. I mean, this may take a moment or two to get going here, but we do the best we can with what we have. And this is the Maple Leaf Forever. Hope you like it. And this is the original version. And it does take a moment or two to get up here. And as I say, we do the best we can with with the conditions in which we find ourselves.
Thank you.